they'll make sure of it. Thanks so much for joining us here today. Do remember what I said about helping to support the show. We need your support with the show. We really do. Thanks for joining us here on the Guy James Show and the Head On Radio Network. Thanks to Billy Shears, our music director. And thanks to all of you for listening. And don't forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth.
People are not transgendered. And Barney said that we've always won civil rights piece by piece. You know, we got civil rights for, you know, we got the vote for blacks before we got the vote for women, before we got the real vote for blacks. We got the civil rights movement. It didn't include gay people to begin with. It's always been piece by piece, and that you don't take away the civil rights of a large number of people merely because everyone isn't included. His view was, let's pass what we can pass and then redouble our efforts to work hard to include transgendered people in the next time. And listen, I know from the Republicans, I know there was a Republican, a moderate Republican, in fact, one of the few Republicans that I have some respect for, but on this issue, he said to Barney Frank, and I heard him say it, you know, I understand where you are with ENDA, I get it, I understand why gay people should have equal rights in the workplace. He said, Barney, I'm just not there on transgender people yet. Maybe I should be, maybe I should be a more enlightened person, I'm just not there yet. And what was he saying? He's still a bigot. Right, but he was, and that was the practicality Barney had to deal with.
Well, I can only offer you the fact that this country has a very poor record of going back and saving the ones we left behind. Example, there were so many LGBT folks who were active in the civil rights movement. In fact, Dr. Martin Luther King, one of his advisors, was an LGBT person, a gay man, to be more specific. And yet, the black community, by and large, this is not altogether true. I've had many wonderful black guests who were working to help us. But by and large, we were left behind, and there was no turning back and looking back. It traditionally, groups that are left behind, nobody ever bothers, especially, and you see, that's the very point. Because they are such a tiny minority, because they are so small, they're so easily forgotten. We all know how the news cycle, you know, within weeks they will have no voice whatsoever. To me, the very argument you're using about them being a small group is the argument for them being included because, Mark, if for no other reason, it wasn't going to be a law anyway. Who cares whether it got through Congress? Who cares whether it got through the House? Bush was going to veto it. So just a matter of principle, I felt that they should be included. It was disturbing to me.
Well, it's I mean, you're right. Bush was going to veto it anyway. What I think you're saying, Peter, is that if we had a Democratic president who was willing to sign it, but we still didn't have majority support in Congress for transgendered rights, that we did have majority support in Congress for gay rights, then you would support splitting the difference, right?
It would leave a very bad taste in my mouth, Mark, but it would be something that I'd be forced to consider. But because there was no chance of it ever becoming law, there's no reason to consider it.
Okay, I see your point. I do see your point. I mean, then it's a question of which you want to do. I thought actually Barney's compromise was a good one. He had two bills. And he endorsed both of them, and
I didn't know there were two bills.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't realize. I thought that only the minus transgender bill was voted. I didn't realize that this is a detail I did not know.
Yes. Barney has always endorsed, sponsored, and heck, I wrote, I mean, listen, these bills are older than when I was in Congress. I can't take credit for them. The modifications I made were relatively small, but, you know, each time you introduce a new bill each year, you look over it and make a few changes. So I had my fingerprints on both of those bills, although I don't want to claim authorship because I can't. But we in our office consistently co-sponsored. Barney Frank, in fact, sent what are called Dear Colleague letters, which is where you send a letter to your fellow member of Congress and you say, dear colleague, you know, you really need to support this bill, et cetera, et cetera. We sent those bills out for both ENDA and for the ENDA that included transgendered. And Barney Frank tried very hard to get the support on both of the bills. And the sad truth is that we had something like, I don't know, 70 or 80% of congressional support for gay people now just to have equal rights, but we couldn't get transgendered to the 40% level. We got I mean, we couldn't even get all the Democrats.
I take your point.
Much less a single Republican.
There was no single Republican that voted for Social Security either. But in this period of time, I've been listening to what you've said, and also thinking about my remark that would be forced to consider it were the president not going to veto it. And I have done that and during this period of time, and I would still have to say that as a gay man and having faced this discrimination for 54 years, I could face it for a few more if it meant not leaving the transgendered folks behind. I have met, Mark, so many wonderful people on my show that are remarkable in every way for the things that they have come through. I personally have met them, and I could not leave them behind for any reason, whether we were going to get rights or not.
It's interesting, and Peter, is why. What it is about gay people that scares people, and what it is about transgendered people that scares people. And apparently, well, it's not apparent, it's a fact, that transgendered people scare people a lot more than gay people do. And maybe it's the weirdness of the idea that someone could change their sex, or that a man wants to be a woman or a woman wants to be a man, but there's the same weirdness for straight people of, you know, why people are attracted to the same sex rather than another sex. Is it that they have, why do you think, Peter, that even many good liberals who support gay rights are still kind of freaked out by transgendered people?
I would have to say absolute ignorance. Do you know that my very first transgender person I had on this show, Strictly Confidential, I was so completely ignorant, I had no idea. I was speaking to a male-to-female transgendered person, and I assumed that all male-to-female transgender people, once they became female, would marry a man or be, in other words, become a female to be heterosexual. Well, this particular woman, she's in a lesbian relation, and apparently this is not unusual.
Not at all. One of the things I learned long ago by a good friend of mine.
It makes it more scary, Mark. It even makes it more scary to those people. But I'm just saying that the colors in the rainbow are very subtle. It just blew me away. I've learned a lot.
Let me explain something that I learned that just made it very clear to me exactly what was going on. This is one of my best friends in the world. In fact, I am the godfather to her son. She is a bisexual African-American woman that I met at Harvard. So there goes about 12 stereotypes out the window.
We slaughter them.
She also speaks 6 languages fluently and is brilliant.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levin.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I apologize for that late start there. You see, I was stood up today. I had planned to have Max Blumenthal on the air. Max Blumenthal is the son of Sidney Blumenthal, the famous Clinton advisor, and he was going to do a show on Pastor John Hagee, someone who Bob Kincaid has told you a lot about, one of the most powerful fundamentalist preachers in the United States, someone with one of those huge mega churches. You know the ones that pass the hat around so that poor people can give their last dollar to a very rich preacher. In any case, Pastor Hagee has said some very controversial things about gay people, about Catholics, about Jews, about lots of people, but he has his allies, including Senator John McCain, the Republican nominee. Anyway, I was going to go through all the details, and Max Blumenthal has them all, and he planned and he confirmed to come today, and, well, he's not here. So, I apologize. These are things that happen. I will try to bring him back another day. But I figured I wouldn't leave y'all in the lurch and open up the mics and give you a chance to say whatever's on your mind. The toll-free number is 877-4HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. I thought I'd start by telling you about a recent fight that I've had with my senator, Virginia Senator Jim Webb. Now, I've talked a little bit about this before. You may know about it. Jim Webb, of course, is the fulcrum, if you will, in the Democratic Senate. He's the guy that put us over the top, you know, and it takes every bit of effort to get the 51 Democrats that we need in order to control the Senate. It takes, yes, Joe Lieberman, is required for Democratic control of the Senate, as well as the other independent socialist Bernie Sanders, but he's always been with us. It takes Tim Johnson being well in South Dakota, and yes, it took Senator Jim Webb of Virginia. If you remember the elections of 06, it was his election that was the closest. It was his election that actually got so close it could have been a recount. He's the one that knocked out longtime Senator George Allen of Virginia, a former governor, the man, frankly, who would have run for president of the United States and would almost certainly have gotten the nomination instead of John McCain had he remained in the Senate. He didn't remain in the Senate because, well, George Allen has a long racist past, and that came to light very clearly to people, finally, when he called one of Jim Webb's staffers filming him Makaka, which is a Tunisian pejorative word for a dark-skinned person. So I was very happy to work and help Jim Webb get elected. I, in fact, did many stories on George Allen's racist past. I was, along with many Virginians, I was one who came there and really helped out his campaign. In fact, he was even on my show when he was running for office. So imagine my disappointment when I found out that my guy fighting Jim Webb, a guy who we always knew was, on the right or side of the Democratic Party, that's understandable. Listen, Virginia is a red state. I mean, it's a state that has voted for a Republican every single year for president since Lyndon Johnson's landslide victory of 1964. Basically, it's voted for Republican ever since the South went Republican when the Democrats started supporting civil rights. So it's been Republican a long time. And, Jim Webb, it was understood if we had someone that was to the left of Jim Webb, well, he couldn't win office. So, I understand that. As y'all know, I'm trying to be practical. I have my ideals, but sometimes you have to, better to have a moderate Democrat than a racist Republican. But the thing that Jim Webb did that made me like him so much, even though he was, Ronald Reagan's former Army general. I think he was. I know he was a general under Ronald Reagan. But the thing that made me like him is that he seemed to be strongly for the Constitution. I mean, that was the thing that really made me like him, apart from the fact he was getting rid of a Republican. No, I didn't expect him to always go the Democratic way on certain issues. But I did think that when it came to the Constitution, this was a man, the same man who was against the war in Iraq, who used to wear his own son's combat boots. This was a man who respected the Constitution of the United States and talked frequently about how it was that George Bush was violating the Constitution of the United States. Bob Kincaid tells me he's Navy Secretary. Thank you. Not Army. Navy Secretary. But he'd always stood up for the Constitution. And in fact, when he talked originally about George Bush's warrantless wiretapping program, he raised the specter of East Germany. And that was very important to me. I also have talked about East Germany. Of course, East Germany was the communist part of Germany when the Soviet Union conquered Germany following World War II and set up a plan whereby citizens could all watch each other. The government of communist East Germany did not want a revolution among the Germans, so they kept files on virtually all of their citizens. Actually, it may only be 10% of their citizens, but it was the people who are most likely to work politically to overthrow the government, if you will, the intelligentsia, the people who the government saw as a threat. And they would put people everywhere to inform on their neighbors, and it worked like that, everyone watching everyone, informing everyone. And when Jim Webb heard about George Bush's illegal warrantless wiretapping program, he compared the situation to East Germany. And I remember thinking during the election, okay, here's a guy who may not want some of the social programs I want, but at the very least, he'll respect the Constitution. He'll defend Congress's right to find out what this very secretive administration is doing. So, yes, I was very surprised when Senator Jim Webb voted on the Senate amendments to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. Now, recall what this is. The Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, the original act, dates back to 1978. It dates back to a response to the excesses of the Nixon administration. Here you had Richard Nixon, and even before him, Lyndon Johnson would use the FBI, and it really it's almost as much J. Edgar Hoover, the director of the FBI, as it was the president, although certainly Nixon did spy on his enemies. That's what Watergate was all about. But J. Edgar Hoover was really into spying on domestic opponents of the administration. Not terrorists, to be clear, but domestic opponents. One of the most famous, of course, was Dr. Martin Luther King. Martin Luther King was spied on by J. Edgar Hoover for many, many years as Hoover tried to prove he was a communist, tried to prove he was in league with our enemies. And, of course, he never could do that. Martin Luther King believed in civil rights, but he certainly was no communist. So FISA was developed after that to make sure that we couldn't spy on people for the wrong reasons. And really, all that FISA is, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, is it sets up a secret court in order to issue warrants. See, the idea was that the Fourth Amendment says that to the Constitution says that you can't spy on people without a warrant. And to get a warrant, you need probable cause to believe a crime has been committed. And that makes sense, right? We don't mind spying on mafia leaders or terrorists, for that matter, as long as we have reason to believe that they are mafia leaders, organized crime, or terrorists. If someone's planning a crime of violence, then certainly I want our government spying on them. But I want them to get a warrant first, because that's what the Constitution requires, because they go to an independent body, a court, they show probable cause, and that way all of us are protected and we don't get spied on just because we do disagree with the president's agenda. So in 1978, this court was set up, because, you know, before that time they said, well, we can't go to real courts because we want to keep this information secret. So they said, okay, we'll set up this secret court. And this secret court worked quite well, I think it's fair to say, for 20-plus years. In fact, some would say that it didn't give enough protection to individuals because the FISA court approved more than 99.9% of the warrants that went to them. That's right. It actually, I've done the figures. It's 99.98%. Out of 17,000 warrants, applications, presented to the FISA court, they rejected five. Five. So, you know, do the math. 99.98%. So this isn't like the administration was having trouble getting things through the FISA court. But what they had to do was they had to put up the paperwork. They had to have a reason. They couldn't just spy on everybody. But that wasn't enough for the administration. As we know, they have gone beyond the FISA court, outside the boundaries of the FISA court, and done things illegally. And now what the administration wants is retroactive amnesty. Retroactive amnesty for the breaking of the law. And they're talking about it through telecom immunity, telecommunications immunity. And, of course, that's they say, you know, this poor big telephone companies. And, well, we really want them to help us, but, oh, my God, they have 40 lawsuits. Stop for a minute. 40 lawsuits? That's all? 4-0? For all the telecommunications companies? Verizon and Sprint and Quest? Well, not Quest. Quest decided to uphold the law and didn't want to help the government break the law. So when these telecommunications giants decided to help the government in violation of the law, people started suing them and said, you need a warrant. And they apparently are getting scared. Not so scared that they would actually stop helping the government. They're still doing that. But scared that they might have to pay people for breaking the law. Well, Bush couldn't have that. So he insisted that the telecommunications companies get immunity. So why can't people just sue the governments? Well, they can't sue the governments because the government, hey, that's state secrets, right? Sovereign immunity. The government is protected from lawsuit. So if you can't sue the government and you can't sue the telecommunications company and the government is getting the telecommunications company to spy on you, who can you sue? Nobody. Nobody. It's illegal. It's unconstitutional. But anybody in law school will tell you that a right without a remedy is no right at all. if it's illegal for someone to steal from you, but the police refuse to help, then how is it illegal for someone to steal from you? If it's illegal for someone to assault you, and you can't turn to anyone for relief, then the illegality of it all is on paper. If it's illegal for the government to spy on you, and you can't go to the government, and you can't go to the telecommunications companies, and you can't go to the courts, and you can't go to Congress, and you can't go to the president, then the Fourth Amendment becomes just a piece of paper, something that you could burn. So I was very shocked by Senator Webb, my senator, the senator from Virginia, voting for this bill. I was also shocked by the fact that he voted for a bill that said that this act, this revision, won't even bind the president. It's called exclusivity. And this clause says, believe it or not, that even though we're giving the president all of these rights, all of these powers to go beyond the law, even so, well, it's not exclusive to this. Now, exclusivity, it's a big word. It's the kind of thing that people don't really know what it means. What does it mean? It means that the law doesn't bind the president. If the president isn't required to exclusively act under this legislation, it means the president can act beyond this legislation. So here you have legislation that gives the president amnesty for all his illegal actions, gives the president permanent secrecy so he never has to tell us how he broke the law, and tells the president that you have, in the future, unlimited right to break the law however you choose with regard to warrantless wiretapping. This law, in effect, takes the Fourth Amendment to the United States and sets it on fire. It burns it. It is a repeal of the Bill of Rights. So I was not happy to see my senator vote for that bill. So I called Senator Webb's office, and I spoke to a staffer there, and the guy who answered the phone, I said, I want to talk to you about the FISA amendments, and he said, I can talk to you about that. I said, well, can I speak to someone who's an expert on it? And he said, no, I can talk to you about that. I said, great. And I laid out just a small portion of what I've shared with you here. I said, why is Senator Webb voting to shred the Constitution? Specifically, why is he voting that the president has unlimited right to spy on us, and voting that he has amnesty for all his illegal actions in the past? And the guy said, he gets an updated set of tools to fight terrorists. And I said, okay, what are those tools? Well, he didn't know. And I said, well, how does he feel about giving the president amnesty, which is what telecommunications immunity is? And he said, well, he's against it. I said, okay. How does he feel about exclusivity, giving the power, the president, the power to act beyond the law in the future for all of future time? He said, he's against it. And I said, but he voted for the bill anyway. And the guy said, yeah. And I said, why? And he couldn't answer my question. So I asked to have someone who could answer my question call me back. And he said they would try, but he couldn't promise they would do so. And I called several more times and was getting no answer. So finally I gave a post. I used my rights as a citizen, and I posted on the blog. I posted on a local blog in Virginia called Raising Cain, RaisingCain.org, a progressive Virginia blog, and I also posted on the Daily Kos. Well, that made people unhappy. Someone in Senator Webb's office, in fact, wrote to the head of the blog in Virginia, a guy by the name of Lowell Feld, and asked Lowell to take my blog down. She said that it was unfair of me to get all this information from just a guy who answered the phone. That I knew that I had asked him whether he was a lawyer, which I had, and he had said no, and that I shouldn't have asked to get information from him. Lowell, to his credit, refused to take my blog entry down, and in fact, you can still find it under Inside Scoop, either at Daily Kos or at RaisingCain.org. But what's interesting about all of this is that this happened a month ago. And I said, fine, let me speak to a lawyer. Let me speak to a lawyer. Okay, you won't let me speak. You know, this is just a guy who answers the phones. Fine, let me speak to someone on their staff. And in fact, I even asked to meet personally with Senator Webb. That was all 3 weeks ago. I still have no answer. In fact, I just sent an email today saying, let me confirm that Jim Webb is refusing to explain his vote, refusing to meet with me, refusing to tell the good people of Virginia why he voted for a bill that he ostensibly opposes. They sent me a form letter. The form letter explains how Jim Webb voted against an amendment that gave retroactive immunity, voted against an amendment that gave the president this power to act beyond the law. It said that he voted for an amendment that would say that telecommunications companies who act in bad faith could still be punished, which, by the way, folks, is beside the point. It's not the telecommunications companies that are acting in bad faith. It's the president. I mean, if the president in good faith asks the telecommunications companies to spy on Martin Luther King and they do so, are they acting in bad faith? No. No, they're just doing what the president says. If the president tells them to spy on me and they do, how are they to know I'm just an ordinary American citizen who is not fond of my government? They don't. This is not a case of telecommunications companies going haywire and spying on everyone because they get their jollies off of it. This is a case of the administration asking the telecommunications companies to spy on people who shouldn't be spied on. So them acting in good faith doesn't matter. Anyway, they also told me that Jim Webb supported the House bill. Now, to recall, the House bill passed in November, before there was a deadline, the Restore Act. This act does protect civil liberties, does require protections of civil liberties, courts, and so forth. This is the bill that Jim Webb says he supports. But that bill never came up in the Senate. That's largely, by the way, the fault of Harry Reid and Senator Rockefeller, the head of the Intelligence Committee in the Senate, Senator Rockefeller of West Virginia. There was, by the way, the Senate Judiciary Committee also passed the bill, the same bill pretty much as the House bill, and Senator Reid didn't decide to use that one. So Reid is definitely a bad guy here, and Rockefeller is definitely a bad guy here. But I have no power over Reid or Rockefeller. I am not a resident of Nevada or West Virginia. But I was mad at my Senator Jim Webb. I wanted to know why it was that he said he was against this bill, but then he voted for it. This fighting hero, this ex-Navy secretary whose son was on the ground in Iraq and came out early against Iraq, why was he such a coward, and yes, I use that word, a coward, before the President of the United States? Why was he such a coward hiding from me, a simple constituent wanting answers? Why is he stonewalling and refusing to say why he cravenly did what Bush asked him to do? And what Dana Perino, that wonderful spokesman for the president, keeps saying when she says 68 senators, bipartisan, voted for this bill. Here, the amazing thing is I just heard Arlen Specter recently, the ranking Republican on the Senate Judiciary Committee, and he doesn't support retroactive immunity either. But he voted for the bill. Okay, that's understandable. He's a Republican. He falls in line when the president asks him to. But Jim Webb? Why was he falling in line? I'll be happy to tell you the punchline to this terrible story after the break, but I also want to encourage you to call in on this or any topic. Do not hesitate. We've got lots of time. This wasn't my planned topic for this evening, and I want to hear from you. The toll-free number is 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. Let me know what's on your mind, and I'll give you the conclusion to my fight with my senator right after this.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The United States could be facing a West Coast ports shutdown on May 1st as longshore workers protest the war in Iraq.
Jesse Russell reports.
The International Longshore and Warehouse Union recently sent a letter to AFL-CIO President John Sweeney, announcing that West Coast port workers would be walking off the job on May 1st to demand a withdrawal of troops from Iraq. The letter from ILWU President Robert McElrath says that during a two-week caucus, members adopted a resolution that called for longshore workers to stop work during the day shift on May 1st, 2008, to express their opposition to the war in Iraq. McElrath asked Sweeney in the letter if other AFL-CIO affiliates would be participating in similar events on May 1st, also known worldwide as International Workers' Day, to honor labor history and express support for the troops by bringing them home safely. The letter was sent on February 22nd.
AFSCME President Gerald McEntee says he'll continue to push for an AFL-CIO endorsement of Senator Hillary Clinton for president in the wake of her big wins in Ohio and Texas. He says about 52% of the Federation's unions now back Clinton, but a two-thirds majority is needed.
That's very difficult. You know, it's like pushing a rock up the side of a mountain.
Despite denials from the Obama campaign and from Canadian officials, McEntee says there's still serious concern in the labor movement over whether Obama's economic advisor said one thing in private to Canadian officials about NAFTA, while Obama's campaign may have been saying something different to voters.
Did the guy say it? Didn't he say it? Does Barack Obama say something in public and something else in private? I mean, we've got in some way to get to the bottom of that and really understand it, because it will continue to be significant in Pennsylvania.
Six National Education Association chapters of the California Teachers Association are directly affiliating now with the AFL-CIO. It's part of a groundbreaking pact between the AFL-CIO and the independent NEA that allows local chapters of the NEA to directly affiliate with the AFL-CIO. Over 10,000 NEA members are in the AFL-CIO as a result. Jesse Russell has today's economic report.
If you are heading toward retirement, as we all are, someday, here is some sobering news. A couple retiring this year should have $225,000 in savings set aside to cover medical costs. That is according to Fidelity Investments, who released a study on Wednesday. And Fidelity isn't the only one with such a projection. According to a study by the Center for Retirement Research, an individual retiring should have $102,000 set aside just for health care in retirement.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm talking about the FISA immunity law, but I want to encourage you to call in and talk about anything on your mind. It's open mic. My original guest didn't show, so I do have some time, and I want to encourage you to take it to talk about this or any other issue. 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. Anyway, as you probably know by now, the Republicans are complaining that we're about to undergo another attack because a bill to protect America's security was allowed to expire. I want to make sure, though, you know the details of it. And I've talked about this before, but it's very important because it's the kind of thing that's getting a lot of press these days. And then I'll get back to my fight with my Senator Jim Webb. After FISA existed for 20-something years, and Bush didn't like the fact that 99.98% was not good enough for him. He needed, I guess, 120%. He wanted to spy on all the people that was ever submitted a warrant to FISA and some people that he couldn't legally spy on. He just started spying on people, and that went on for many years. The New York Times discovered it, didn't report on it. They, quizzling New York Times, sat on it for a year until finally it was reported that they might report on it, and they didn't want some other place to get the scoop. So they finally told us that George Bush was preparing East German-like files, that he was indeed spying on people outside of FISA. And the FISA court got wind of it, and they were unhappy too. So what happened is George Bush got upset, and the fact that a court told him he didn't have unlimited dictatorial power certainly didn't make him happy. And so he asked Congress for emergency legislation to allow him to keep doing what he was doing, or at least to do what he was doing, and to have really no protection whatsoever. And Congress gave good news and bad news. And the bad news was is they gave the president this right. And I remember complaining about it right here on the horn when they did it. They caved in and said, all right, you've scared us. You've said terrorists are going to attack if we don't give you this act called the Protect America Act. But the good news is we're going to let it expire in 6 months because we know this is a violation of the Fourth Amendment. We know this is a civil liberties problem, and we're going to pass something better in the meantime. So they decided to violate the Constitution, but only for 6 months. Thank you, Congress. And that is good news. I mean, better a six-month unconstitutional violation than a permanent one, right? So, of course, we have November 07. The House passes the Restore Act, the act that allows you to go and I'm trying to get the acronym right. Let me find that out for you. But it's an act that allows you to check on terrorists, but at the same time does so in a way that protects civil liberties. Here it is. Responsible surveillance that is overseen, reviewed, and effective. Act. Aren't acronyms wonderful? Responsible surveillance that is overseen, reviewed, and effective act. And they passed it in November of this year. Webb says he supported it. The Senate Judiciary Committee was ready to put that one forward. And Reid, who's supposed to be a majority leader for the Democrats, a majority of Democrats supported this bill, including some Republicans, people like Arlen Specter. Reid didn't put it on the floor. No, Reid put the president's version on the floor, and he did so in a way that made it virtually impossible to change, with 60 amendments to change it. And then he voted the right way, as if to say, oh, well, I did the right thing, oh, what's your problem? The problem is that Senator Reid, and maybe because he gets telecommunications contributions, I don't know the reason, or maybe he's just too good friends with Senator Rockefeller, but for whatever reason, he took Rockefeller's version rather than the version that the majority of Democrats support. And I think what we have here is a problem with the kinds of people who go on intelligence committees. If you look at the Democrat, I can't help what the Republicans do. It's not my party. You know, most of them just do wrong, and I have to try to vote them out. But for my party, when the Democrats put people on intelligence committees, they don't put Ronald Dellums anymore. Remember Ronald Dellums, very strongly anti-war congressman from California, and he eventually became head of the Armed Services Committee, and it was beautiful. No, we don't do that anymore. We put on the intelligence committees our most hawkish Democrats. And I don't think that's right. I think we need to put in our intelligence committees people who represent a cross-section of the party. You may remember that Senator Rockefeller was told about this warrantless wiretapping. And what did he do? He wrote a handwritten letter to George Bush and said, please, sir, stop it. Please, please, stop abusing us. Didn't tell his staff. Didn't tell the press. The president warned him if he told anybody, you know, he would be prosecuted criminally. But sometimes I think when you're a senator of the United States, you have to rise above it. I think when you're a senator of the United States, you have to say this. You have to say, ladies and gentlemen, CNN, give me a speech. The president of the United States is doing an unconstitutional program. He is violating the rights of innocent millions of innocent Americans. He has told me I will be criminally sanctioned if I tell you what it is. So I won't tell you what it is. I can't tell you. All I will tell you is the president is breaking the Constitution, breaking the law that affects hundreds of thousands of innocent Americans, and I beg the president to let me tell you what it is because some of you may want to impeach him for it. But I can't tell you what it is. He said he'd put me in jail. So I won't. I'll respect that. But, Mr. President, I think you need to stop this and stop it now. And then let them ask the president what to do. Yeah, we don't have people on the Intelligence Committee with that kind of courage. No, we sure don't. And look, I understand the need to fight terrorists, okay? I get it. Yes, please don't give me the George Bush line. Well, some people just don't understand that there are terrorists out there trying to kill us. Yes, there are terrorists out there trying to kill us. I get it. It's true. true. I'm not a 9/11 conspiracist. But I also believe that the techniques we have and the Constitution we have are sufficient to protect us. We've survived much worse than this. We've survived civil war. We've survived the War of 1812, where the British burned down the White House. We've survived far more gruesome wars and terrible things. Because the Constitution does allow us to spy on people. It just requires a warrant. It just requires a reason. Probable cause is the lowest of standards in the law. It's very low. You just have to have reasonable suspicion. Some reason to suspect that someone may have done a crime. It ain't that much, my friends. But we have on these intelligence committees Democrats who want to show how tough they are, because the intelligence committees find out all this classified information and they undergo security clearances. And so Rockefeller is not the only one. In the House, we have Sylvester Reyes. Now, it's interesting. The woman who originally was head of the intelligence committee is Jane Harman. And I had some problems with her as well, but I think she was better than Sylvester Reyes. But she had her own, let's just call it a personality conflict with Nancy Pelosi, and Pelosi was not going to allow Jane Harman to be there. And I agree that number two shouldn't have been there. That was Alcee Hastings. He's a judge that was impeached and convicted and thrown out of office. Whatever you think of Alcee Hastings' politics, it doesn't really... Not a good idea to have a head of our intelligence committee be an impeached and convicted judge. So we're left with Sylvester Reyes. Sylvester Reyes, who said, quote, that about this telecom immunity bill, "We've got the wrong target," Sylvester Reyes says. "The issue is how to craft legislation that only protects companies that acted lawfully." Congressman Reyes, companies that acted lawfully are already protected under the law. Because if they didn't act illegally, they're not in danger. Doesn't that make sense? If companies followed the law, if they got a warrant, I'm okay with legislation. All right, here's my legislation. You ready? You're worried about telecommunications immunity? It's very simple. If a telecommunications company has a warrant that you can prove was duly signed by a judge, you know, it wasn't a fraudulent, wasn't a, you know, a forged warrant, okay? All you have to prove, telecommunications company, is when you're sued, is that you have in your hand, or electronically, a warrant issued by a lawful judge of the United States, and I'm willing to dismiss every lawsuit against you. You want an easy way to give telecommunications companies immunity for acting lawfully? I got the solution, Congressman Reyes. I got the solution, George Bush. It's very simple. Show the companies a warrant, and companies spy to your little heart's content. If Lyndon Johnson or Nixon could get a warrant against Dr. King, well, then it's fine. You know, an independent judge does the wrong thing, at least it can be overturned eventually by a higher court. Not that I trust the Supreme Court right now. But you got independent eyes looking at this thing. You have courts, and they're not all controlled by George Bush. And that's not good enough for Reyes. And it's not good enough for Rockefeller. And it's not good enough for Jim Webb. I mean, all that is the Constitution. And we all know that none of these men respect the Bill of Rights. But it is good enough for the majority of Democrats, who are thus far standing firm. Thus far, the Democrats aren't caving. Thus far, House Democrats are not passing this bill to give the president retroactive amnesty for the laws he broke in the past and prospective amnesty for all the laws he would break in the future. Other than that, the bill's okay. So what happened? The Democrats said, all right, tell you what, Mr. President, we'll extend this Protect America Act, this pretty awful extension that gives the president virtual right to spy on anybody, goes beyond FISA, but doesn't give this retroactive immunity and doesn't give this prospective immunity.
We don't like the bill, but we'll extend it just while we work on a bill that comes around and protects civil liberties. And the president said no. And here's the part that's most important. Here's the part that the Republicans are not telling you. The day before the Democrats let this act expire, they voted to extend the act. And the Republicans filibustered. And in the House, the Republicans voted no, joined with some courageous Democrats who voted no because they didn't like the bill to begin with. Bush threatened to veto it. So George Bush took the very same bill, except for the immunity part, the bill that supposedly protects us against terrorists, and he said, you know what, I care more about covering up the illegal acts my administration did. I care more about protecting telecommunications giants from, what, 40 lawsuits? Than I do about protecting the American people. And now they're going on. You see the rhetoric. Oh, America people, we're in trouble. We're in trouble. The Democrats let this bill expire. No, they didn't. The president let this bill expire. Let's be very, very clear. And I think that's why it's not resonating with the American people, except to the extent that people are tricked stupidly into not knowing all the facts. And by the way, if any of this is unclear, I do want to give you one more chance to call in. If I'm not making myself clear in any way, 877-4HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366 if you have a question about this. But so far, the House is standing firm. As Nancy Pelosi put it, if we give him this exclusivity part, this prospective amnesty for all future presidents in the future, future presidents in the future, that's redundant, for all future presidents, if we do that, then we might as well just pack up and go home. What good is Congress? What good is the Constitution at that point? But let me take you back to Jim Webb. Jim Webb writes me this letter, well, not him, a staffer, saying what he said, saying that, you know, he wants to do it the right way, he wants to do it the House way, he wants to protect civil liberties, but oh no, he couldn't do it. Because he's, of all his experience in the Navy and intelligence, he knew that he had to give the president the things that he said the president shouldn't have. He had to pardon the president for his past lawbreaking, unconstitutional lawbreaking. We had to take these impeachable offenses and say, Mr. President, you get a pass, and we won't even ask you what you did. And we have to say in the future, you can do whatever you want. How, Bush? And even though Webb was against both of these, he voted for the bill because, well, we need these updated tools. And to this day, he refuses to tell me what those updated tools are. Now, I actually know some of them. Here's the secret. Shh, don't tell Senator Webb. I know some of those tools. There are things like blanket warrants, things like allowing data mining, allowing them to go through billions of phone calls and supposedly magically find the terrorists by looking for keywords. Do we really think the terrorists are going to say, let's bomb the World Trade Center? Oops, oops, I think I'm being spied on right now. I just don't think they're that stupid. And the ones that are, well, probably are connected to someone we can find out anyway. Look, if the idea is reasonable, if the idea is reasonable, go to a court, get a warrant. Go to Congress, get a bill. Just don't make it blanket. Don't say that the president gets blanket immunity in the past and in the future. I'm curious if any of you have had experience calling into your member of Congress, trying to convince your senator or your representative to do what you wanted them to do, and whether you've gotten this kind of stonewalling that I have. There's still some time left, 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. I know that in my case, I sometimes get more information from people who aren't even my senators. I recently did a story that I'm shopping around, and some of you may have heard it, on the alliance between white supremacists and Islamic terrorists. Very few people know about the alliance, so the fact that the FBI covered up the entire thing. It's a very interesting story, and I urge you to go to my website to listen to it. I may do a repeat of it here. But in doing so,
I had to talk to Senator Grassley's staff. Now, he's a Republican, and he's from Iowa. And yet his staff gave me a lot more time and attention than my Democratic senator from my home state. And that's shameful. That's shameful. Webb could have said, Mark, I disagree with you. Let me tell you why. I think that these particular updated set of tools that allow us to do this, that, and the other, that weighs more than giving the president a pardon for his lawlessness. Could have said that. I disagree, but he could have said it. Heck, he could have said, you know what, we're not going to talk with you anymore. We don't like the fact that you're telling the topic, you're talking about our conversations with the wider public. We don't think a senator should be held accountable to the public. Bad, bad thing to say, but hey, at least it's something, right? No. No, they didn't say either of those things. Let me take a quick break, give you a chance to call in. I'd like to hear from any of you if you can tell me your experiences calling into Congress, trying to get them to do what you want. And we'll be right back with more of the Inside Scoop right after this.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. A couple weeks back, I got a nervous phone call from Dennis Kucinich, who was very worried about his opponents in the primary contest for his seat in Congress. They were taking a lot of cheap shots at him for being a perennial presidential candidate and for not adhering to the business of his district, allegedly. Kucinich isn't a congressman, he's a showman, said his main rival, Cleveland City Council member Joe Simperman. Yet Kucinich prevailed to the relief of many progressives who've relied on Dennis Kucinich for his courageous stands against NAFTA, against corporate giveaways, against the Iraq War, against the Iran War. They've admired his visionary pleas to rid the world of nuclear weapons and to establish a Department of Peace. And they really appreciate his effort to impeach Cheney and Bush for their multiple crimes against their Constitution. They sensed it would have been a terrible loss to the whole progressive movement if Kucinich had been defeated in the primary. And they know he can represent his constituents in Cleveland, even as he represents the hopes of millions of progressives around the country who want peace and democracy. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I was hoping to get one of you to call in and tell me about your experiences with Congress. 877-4-HEAD-ON. 877-443-2366. But none of you did. So I want to tell you about what I did yesterday. Yesterday, I trudged down to the Senate Judiciary Committee myself. There was a hearing, and Director Robert Mueller, the director of the FBI, was appearing before Senators Leahy and Hatch and who else was there? Arlen Specter, Senator Grassley, Senator Feinstein, Schumer, White House, Kennedy, Feingold. I may have left a couple out. Cole, Kyle. But he was talking about all the ways that the FBI is messing up. One of the main ways is that they're not going through the numbers of people that are trying to become citizens. They're supposed to do background checks, and so they're backed up. And Republicans were insisting they not go too fast because, there's some terrorists would slip through, which is a fair point. And Democrats were saying don't go too slow because these people want to become citizens so they can vote in 2008. Also a very fair point. And the FBI director was saying, well, you didn't give us enough money to do this. Another fair point. I actually think they were all being pretty fair on this point. But what it shows is that how our government is starved for money, right? When we put all this money into Iraq, we don't have the money needed to do background checks on people at home. I mean, when George Bush says we're fighting over there so we don't have to fight over here, at the same time, he's starving organizations like the FBI for the money they need to do background checks on terrorists who may already be here. In effect, we are fighting them over there and therefore making it worse
for us over here. And I just thought this was an interesting classic example of how it is that the president was exactly wrong on that subject. Another thing that came before the director of the FBI, on which the president is exactly wrong, is the issue of torture. The FBI has long avoided torture. They have a practice of building a rapport with their suspects. In fact, recently an FBI agent did it with Saddam Hussein, built a rapport, found all kinds of information out from Saddam Hussein, and then Hussein was executed anyway. Didn't affect his execution. But you know the old saying, you win more flies with honey than with a stick. I think it's with a stick. In any case, you do catch more flies with honey. And you do. If you are nice to people, or even trick them, you can find out all kinds of information. When, however, we waterboarded people, even very nasty, evil terrorists, even terrible terrorists like Abu Zubaydah, okay, and I don't dispute that he's a terrorist. We waterboarded him, and the information we got from that point on was unreliable. And that's what the studies show. And here's what's so interesting. You can argue that we shouldn't torture people because it's against human rights. It's against human dignity. It's against the Constitution of the United States, the Eighth Amendment. It's against the very concept of who we are as Americans, of who we are as human beings, that we don't torture people because we don't want to be tortured ourselves. It's the classic golden rule, that we don't torture ourselves because we don't want to lower ourselves to the standards of our enemies. Those are all very good reasons not to torture. But throw them all aside for the second. Those are all liberal reasons, caring about humanity and believing in human rights and all that stuff. Let me make a conservative argument. Torture harms us in the war on terror. That's right. Torture harms us. Torture gives us false information. People will say or do anything so that they're not tortured. They will do anything to make it stop. They will tell the interrogator what the interrogator wants to hear. If you don't give a damn about humanity, and you have no concern about people torturing our troops, and you don't think the Constitution binds our government at all, just consider that fact. Torture harms us in fighting terrorists because it gets lies rather than truth out of the terrorist. If you want to punish a terrorist, there's solitary confinement. You know, that's okay with me. I don't mind that. We can do things like that. But waterboarding, drowning, Spanish Inquisition tactics. I saw Director Mueller up there, and I've got real problems with Director Mueller. In fact, I think he's covering up his own illegal actions in the FBI. As many of you know, I've done a story about this, and this isn't the time or place to do that story. It's coming up. I hope to get it published soon. But he was right on the issue of torture when he pointed out that the FBI has not found the effectiveness of their interrogation to gone down at any part because they don't use torture. And the FBI, when asked to participate in acts that they considered to be torture, left and refused to participate. So our FBI doesn't torture, and our Army doesn't torture, and our CIA still does. And our Republican nominee for president, who was tortured himself, seems to want to protect the CIA's right to do that, at least by his vote on recent legislation. And that is among the many reasons why we need to vote for a Democrat for president of the United States. I know that Obama and Clinton, well, it's kind of like mommy and daddy fighting. We like them both. We want it all to end. We want a nominee. We'll get one. And whoever he or she is will be a far better president than John McCain. That's all for the Inside Scoop. Tune in next week. I'm going to talk about NAFTA 2.0. Do you know about the North American